Well, welcome again, everybody, to Moving the Needle, the podcast show where we really take a deep dive into the things that are affecting our students and their education, specifically in the charter school space. I am Pastor Sebron O. Johnson, so grateful to be here with the one and only Dr. Paul Miller.
What up, everybody? We're here for episode number 2 of Moving the Needle. We're trying to get some movement here.
Episode number two. We're going to deal with some myths that hang over the collective heads of the charter school sector. So we're going to debunk some things today. We're going to take a deep dive. Not only are we going to look at those things, but we're going to examine them also through the eyes of Jasmine Mathis, the leader of Citizenship and Science Charter School of Rochester. We are so very grateful that you are here with us today. How are you, Jasmine?
I'm doing well. Thank you all so much for having me. It's definitely an honor.
Great, great, great. Good to have you. Hey, on this show, we deal with the what, the so what, and the now what. The what, there are a lot of myths out there that go unanswered, and we need to deal with it. So what? Well, you know what is just said on our radio show, that if you say the wrong thing long enough, people see it as truth. So it is imperative, it is incumbent upon us that we straighten some things out. And then at the very end, some now what? And Dr. Miller is going to give us some prescriptions that are going to help us walk a little better in light of all the fiction that's out there. But right now, if you don't mind, Jasmine, if you can just give us a little bit about your journey from Memphis, Tennessee to Rochester, how you got here and what are you doing now in the charter school space?
Absolutely. So I started my teaching career down in Knoxville, Tennessee, and it was really exciting. It was a school right down the street from my church in the heart of the community, and I actually had the opportunity to teach in the same classroom that my grandmama went to third grade in. So it was absolutely wonderful. And then my husband, he began pastoring a church in Syracuse, and that's what led us to Syracuse. And at that time, I didn't have a lot of knowledge, you know, about charter schools and things like that. But I met someone that was working for Syracuse Academy of Science, and I applied and I was hired, and I started off as a TA, and then I began teaching 6th and 7th grade ELA. And from there, I, you know, just served as a mentor to other teachers. I served as a grade chair, just providing training and support for teachers as they did the best that they could to support our students. And from there, I was offered the position to lead Citizenship and Science Academy of Rochester.
Wow, that's exciting. I'm going to ask you this first question, then I'm going to turn it over to Dr. Miller to go forward. But since coming to Rochester and leading Citizenship, I'm sure that you found out that this first myth is true, that you only get the best and the brightest students, that you only get the ones that are going to be perfect SAT scores, and that all are heading to Harvard and Princeton and Yale, and those are the only students you get in your K-3 classes.
Yeah, so that is not true. Our school is first come, first serve, and is based on the lottery. So based on the lottery, we take those families first come, first serve. We have some students, you know, that may be above grade level. We have some students that have significant needs. But, you know, as those CSAR Adams will tell you, they are leaders when they walk in the building. They don't have to be the smartest in the room, but they have to be the hardest working in the room. So, but no, we do not have always like those students that are, we don't have Einsteins all over the building. That's for sure.
So Jasmine, I want to understand something. It doesn't have anything to do with education, right? So you're from Memphis, right? And so give me something country. Say something country first. So then we got to let people, you got to represent, put some respect on her name first.
Right.
It better be country because I'm from Alabama.
Okay, see, come on.
Oh, okay. Hi, Alabama.
Okay, give me something country,
that's
girl.
That's real country. I don't know.
You put some respect on your name, girl. You're not representing
I really do try to mask that accent quite a bit.
But don't mask it for us now.
I have to.
And see, we're moving the needle. We gotta keep it real over here. We want to hear that accent. So on top of that, we know that that Tennessee and that down south area is famous for barbecue and some other things like that.
Go get you some dry rub.
Okay, but since you came to Rochester, have you had boss sauce yet?
I have had boss sauce.
Did you have boss sauce? Now, boss sauce is like a little slice of heaven. That it, so I know you've been in Tennessee and you get this barbecue, but you know, how's the boss sauce treating you? Show the boss sauce some love. Put some respect on his name.
I love boss sauce. I can't hold you. Like, I love it. And you go, like, you go over there to get you some sweets, like, right across the street from the school. I also love the garbage plates. Like, they're my favorite thing. So I always pop over to Henrietta Hots. You know, we'll pop on. I saw you.
Yep, there you go.
I
like to eat. You know, I'm a fat kid who loves cake.
So, you know, Rochester got some good food. I'll keep it.
All right. So we had to, you know, I had to check on your boss. I said, check on, are you, you know, are you really representing the Rock yet or not?
Listen.
You know, so you're with us. But speaking of all that, you know, what's the hardest thing for you about running your charter school? Talk to the people. What's it like running a charter school?
So I will say, like, first and foremost, like, I absolutely love it. Like, it's not a challenge that we've had that we've not been able to overcome. I think a lot of the challenges that we have are rooted in the myths, and people just really and truly not understanding all components of the charter schools. So, you know, people may have the myth that we're just cherry picking kids, or, you know, they may have the myths, you know, that our teachers, you know, they aren't all there for the kids, you know, or they just come here to work because they couldn't work somewhere else, when the truth of the matter is our teachers are very highly qualified, very highly trained, you know. So just really dispelling some of those myths, you know, and just also letting families know, like, that we are here for them. We are here for their scholars. And this is not an atmosphere where we're trying to push families out. Like, we encourage you to come in. We encourage you to share your concerns and, you know, give your ideas and suggestions. So I think that's really been one of the things that's been the most difficult to navigate, just spreading truth, like, in the midst of a lot of the myths that are out there.
Now, you know, coming from somewhere different, from Memphis to Syracuse to Rochester, Rochester is one of those places that's highly impoverished. You name the negative statistics, we're up there in almost all categories nationally.
Mm-hmm.
How has it been different here than it's been in some of the other places you've been, and why?
That's a great question. Like, I will say, just systemically nationwide, a lot of the things that plague our families, like, we see a lot of those things nationwide. And it's one of those things where one of the things that I have noticed in Rochester, like, with our families that are a little more impoverished systemically, it's almost like a lack of hope, you know. And it's, you know, and I always tell them, like, listen, like, we are here for you. We are here for your baby. Like, even, like, you can do anything you set your mind to. It's not too late. You know, so I think that is one of the differences. Sometimes, like, I have seen, like, a lot of defeat and despondency, and I'm like, no, put those dukes up. We still in the fight. It's not over yet. So I think that's one of the primary differences.
Wow, I get it. I get it. Now, here's something, because one of the myths follows this. Now, the truth is that on the whole, charter schools in Rochester outperform district schools about 3-1. So that's a truism. But one of the myths that we hear is that, well, you may outperform right now, but you really have no accountability. And district schools are under so much scrutiny. Charter schools have no accountability. What say you?
I say charter schools have far more accountability. We are definitely held accountable to the state. Our students must perform, because that's why the charter schools are here. Like, we're here to serve as an option. And that's not to say that district school, there are phenomenal teachers in district schools that do amazing work. But for the charter specifically, it's written in our charters. We have to perform. And if our students are not performing where they need to be, we could lose our charter. So we don't have the luxury of having low student achievement and low student growth and staying open. We have to move our students to the places, Dr. Miller said, we have to move the needle. We have to move our students to the place, like, where they are excelling academically, and where they're growing academically.
So I was hoping for a child, please. See, I was hoping for a child, please. Come on, give me a child.
We don't give a child, please, down south. You get a quick man.
Okay,
that.
See,
man,
all right, see, okay, see, I was, there we go. See, now we getting it to come out of her, y'all. She just got to get a little relaxed around here. She got a man. She got that. There we go. Now she got a little swag on it.
With
those myths, and just to defunct those again, the accountability. So the charter schools have to answer to, not only have to answer to their own school board, because again, a charter school is its own district. So it has a board that they have to answer to, that has to follow all the policies and procedures legally that boards have to follow for nonprofits and for within the regulations of all the rules that are there. So there's the board. Then they have to also answer to the community, because it's small. And if you don't answer to this community, you probably aren't going to be successful. Then you also have to answer to the state organization that is governing you. So either there's one of two, right? It's either SUNY or it's NYSED. And you have an accountability plan. And if you don't meet this accountability plan, and you do that more than probably a year or two where you're non-adherence of this plan, there's a good potential possibility you will be closed.
Hey, Paul, how long do charter schools in New York State have as far as a charter, and how long can they try to prove themselves before they may be judged academically ineligible to continue?
So your first renewal, right? So if you just opened, you typically can, you'll get 5 years when you first open. So if from day one, you get 5 years, and they start reviewing you year four. They review it all throughout, but they do the hard renewal. You start doing it towards the end of year four, right? So when that happens, you get the 5 years. If you're doing well, they can give you another 5 years. If you're not doing so well, they're going to give you anywhere from 1 to 3 years. And then that 1 to 3 years will determine on how strong you're doing and if you turn it around or not. And then afterwards, when you come up to renewal again, your second time, it's either all or nothing. So from after that first renewal, you only get zero or you get five.
Wow. So speaking of these accountability measures and what charters have to answer to, and Jasmine, she really kind of spurned on my interest in this one. And that is, one of the myths out there is that charter schools do not hire certified teachers. Can you talk to that? Charter schools do not hire certified teachers, so that if you go to a charter school, the myth says the teachers there will not be certified.
That's some man. Come on, give me that's crazy, because in the charter it says you have to have X percentage of your teachers that are certified, and if you don't have that percentage, it becomes a knock against your charter. So now, I will say that you have the opportunity to hire non-certified teachers. And at times, and let's be transparent, at times, especially in this economy, in this world right now, the way that there's such a lack of educators, there's times that the needle has switched a little bit and you're getting more educators who are not certified, but that's not the preference. The charter schools prefer certified teachers who have been through a certification program, who understand the pedagogy of teaching. But I will also say that the charter schools have to become really astute at teaching people how to teach. And so there's a different process. Just because you went through certification doesn't mean that you know how to teach black and brown kids. And so if I look at most of the certification programs around here, and I've had conversations with almost every school here in Rochester and in other places too, right? But here in Rochester specifically, and when you talk to them, they all want to talk about how wonderful their education programs are and how much they're preparing teachers to teach black and brown kids. And they have this urban component. That's poopy caca. You know, that's not true, because the educators are getting here certified or not, getting ate up by our kids because they don't have the skills that they need. So the charter schools have to do an innate job to develop those skills. What do you guys do to develop your teachers, Jasmine? And what does that look like? Because are your teachers coming prepared, whether they're certified or not? And talk to the certification piece too.
Yeah, so at CSAR, my teachers are coming in certified. As Dr. Miller stated, that's always the first option. But as he also stated, there is a huge disconnect between what's happening in the college classroom versus what's happening out here in the real world. So for charter teachers, they have to come back a whole 2 to 3 weeks before schools start back, and they are in really intense training so that they can learn the ins and outs of pedagogy, so they can learn the ins and outs of like their curriculum planning, setting up those classroom procedures, you know, and things like that, and also learning about educational equity and implicit biases and how that affect teaching. Like when they walk in the door, we want to make sure that they are 1,000%, you know, prepared. And also, just like as a school district, we also have a teacher certification master's program. So for those teachers that may have a bachelor's degree, and they, you know, want to switch and take on teaching as a second career, we'll hire them, you know, as a co-teacher, and we'll send them back to school to get their master's degree so that they can be certified that way as well. But for the most part, our lead teachers are certified.
Did you go through that with your school district?
So for me, I was certified out of state already when I came. So when I came, I did not have the New York State certification. I was certified out of state. And I had already had because that's what New York State says as well. Like, you need to have 3 years of teaching experience to be a lead teacher in a charter school without the certification. So when I came in, I did have the experience, but my charter also supported me in like working with New York State Teach to do reciprocity to be able to get my license. So I am professionally certified now, got the SBL and all, so we good. Jasmine is certified.
So we know Jasmine is certified. Jasmine is good. But I'm a few months older than you and you two in the room, and I got to ask this question because Jasmine said something I didn't understand. She said, I'm not holding you. Now, I want to know what that means. I hear that a lot from the young people now. So first, tell me, what does it mean when you say, I'm not holding you?
See, when I say I'm not holding you, that means I'm not lying to you. I'm going to be honest. I'm not faking or flogging, as we call it down south. We're not flogging.
If y'all don't get y'all granddaddy off this radio show, somebody get y'all granddaddy.
No, I got it now.
Maybe I get Grandpa Alpha from, the first Alpha ever invented, right?
Come on now.
Where y'all getting Grandpa Alpha from?
Alpha Phi Alpha, the first of the first. Yeah. Now I get it. I'm not holding you means I'm not lying to you. I'm not flogging. We straight up, we being real. Okay, so here's a real moment. I need to get this. Rochester, I grew up here. Paul Miller, I know you grew up here. Rochester, for all the great things that it offers, is one of the most segregated cities in the entire country and has been for quite some time. And so there's a lot of classism that exists in Rochester. When the city school district was formed, there was a scenario by which many individuals during the Great Migration were coming north and trying to find better jobs and factory jobs and the like. And the district was tasked with creating room for them to go through, get a high school education, and be able to work in the factories. And so it wasn't necessarily the mandate or the vision or the mission to graduate and have individuals go on to post-secondary work and get PhDs. And so now we find ourselves in a scenario where this generational intellectual poverty exists because there's a system that wasn't created to really advance black and brown folks. And so now you going from Memphis to Syracuse to Rochester, you've been tasked with leading not only students, but a school in a system where this classism exists. And so I just want to know, what types of innovative approaches do you use to best serve students in a climate that wasn't created to benefit them in the first place?
That was a loaded, deep question, man.
That was very loaded. That was very loaded.
Grandpa Alpha redeemed himself with
he
that
did,
one.
He did. He got me on that one.
Okay.
So we can look at this in two ways. And if I don't hit the nail on the head, just keep it real with me and let me know. I would argue that school systems in general were not set up for black and brown kids to succeed, or, you know, poor white kids to succeed, because we're in that John D. Rockefeller mindset. We're not here to, you know, educate and create generations of thinkers. We're here to create generations of workers. So now looking at that, you know, with the society that we live in today, it's not very many things that you can do without a degree. And with that in mind, it is very difficult to, because like within our communities, not only are our people on the back end of an educational revolution, but they're also on the back end of a technological revolution. So even the way in which society is moving, they don't have the resources that they need to be able to access some of the things out here in relation to the movement of the job market. So like, that's what I said. Don't get me started, girl.
Okay? Man.
Okay. I'm from the school of Malcolm X. Do you hear me? Fannie Lou Hamer. Don't get me started. So there's a few things, because one of the things that we have to do as schools is the first thing. And I tell students all the time, it is not my job to tell you what to think. It is my job to teach you how to think, to teach you, like, you don't have everything at your fingertips, but let me show you how to get it. Let me show you how to network and get in rooms and have conversations. So a few things that we've done, like, to just promote equity amongst, like, just in our school community. So prior to becoming the leader of CSAR, like, I was teaching sixth and seventh grade ELA, and some of my students were described as kids that were disruptive. They were not able to learn. So I was like, bet, I'm gonna show you. So I took that curriculum and I connected it to community. So the seventh grade curriculum, we were reading Frederick Douglass's narrative. So we partnered with the local cafe, and that, you know, they're famous for their milkshakes. So what our kids did, they had to like draft a budget, a marketing plan, and they presented ideas for a Frederick Douglass themed milkshake all throughout the month of February, because that's when he celebrated his birthday. And like that company, they like our kids presented before them, showed them the budget, how much the cost would be. They met with the CEO to determine like what were some of the flavors that were the most popular, like what would work best for their customers. So in them seeing that, oh, okay, something that I'm learning is directly connected to my community, light bulbs went off. I also told, like, we also teach, like, you know, a few things. And I always teach avocation, like, to my kids, even in second grade, first grade, kindergarten. I like to teach kids how to use their voice and advocate for themselves. Because, listen, a closed mouth don't get fed. You have to be able to open up your mouth and actively say what you need. So even within, like, with our students, and even something simple, because not everything have to be a grand gesture in creating equity. Last school year, my first grade students, they had a course called L&L right after lunch. And L&L is listening and learning. So it's to build comprehension through the science of reading. And it's a great curriculum. But like this particular student falling asleep every day during L&L. He just can't stay up. So I went to see him, you know, just to take a walk. You know, I just had a conversation with him, you know, and I was like, listen, this is your education and I want to make sure I'm supporting you and getting the most out of it. What can I help you with? So he was like, Ms. Mathis, he was like, I can't sit there after lunch. He was like, we just had lunch and recess. Like, I'm tired. This is boring. I said, oh, so you don't, I was like, so what's boring about it? Like, you don't like what you're reading? You don't like what you're learning about? He was like, not necessarily. I just don't like it after lunch. I said, so what can I do for you? He was like, I don't know. Maybe change the time. So I was like, okay, cool. So I went and did a few walkthroughs, you know, just to see that he wasn't the only one that was a little lethargic. So I talked to the teachers like, hey, what are some things that you're noticing about having L&L right after lunch? And they were like, well, the students aren't as gay, like are not as engaged. Like we're doing as best as we can to get them active. So I was like, okay, cool. How about this? How about we just switch the schedule around and let's do L&L before lunch to see, you know, how that works. So I pulled the student back in my office. Hey, I'm going to change the schedule based on what you said, and we're going to put L&L before lunch. And I want you to do a few things for me. Let me know if you're still sleepy. Let me know if you're more engaged. Let me know if you still think it's boring. Cool. Checked in with him a couple days later. He was walking around there. And like, if you walk in the building, like he tell people, I'm the principal. He had his chest out then because like he saw, okay, I was able to go and I was able to advocate for myself and saying that this didn't necessarily work for me or my peers, and it changed, you know. So I spoke to him a couple days later, and he was like, yeah, this works better for me. He didn't go to sleep for the rest of the school year, and like he still had a class right after lunch. But giving students a seat at the table in their education, recognizing that this is just as much theirs as it is, I like, we're invested, but it belongs to them. So giving students a seat at the table is definitely one way that we try to build equity, you know, within the schools. Like every voice matters. And, you know, also like, and just instructionally, you know, like we definitely meet students where they are. Like we provide those additional classes. provide, you know, additional support for our students so that they can learn and grow. And we also rope our families into that because I hold dinner with the dean. So families just come and we eat good too, y'all. We be eating.
You ain't invite us to the, Memphis Dry Rub.
You already on my docket for this year. Don't you worry. You just don't know it yet.
Bring me something good.
you just don't know yet. You gonna be in there. Okay. So, you know, I mean, so even that, like having our parents, you know, coming and talking, because ultimately, like, and you know, it's a school choice. You guys chose us. What is it that you're looking for? Like, what do you see for your child's future?
You know what I love that you do, and that you are one of the things that you do that is really strong to me is, as a Black woman, you're very conscious of that you're a Black woman. And so when I say that, that's a beautiful thing, because you are consciously making an effort to put more color in your school. Mm-hmm. And when I say put more color, yes, educators of color, but also leadership of color and a mindset of color and curriculum that's competent in educating your staff members on how to work with students of color. And so this is a conscious effort of something that you are doing, and you're not taking your Blackness for granted, right? And so I appreciate that, because I know as a school leader, and often we don't get to see people who look like us. Now, and down south, I know there's a lot, it's a little different depending on the area that you're in, right? But, you know, up north here, most of the time you don't see your teachers or your principals who look like you. And so when you do, it's something different and special. And so, like, I try to value that as a leader. Like, I put my leadership team was, and I always want to go with the most qualified person, right? But I tried to make a conscious effort to find the most qualified person who looks like our students. Mm-hmm. And so putting them in front of our kids, and I know that you're doing that. You're getting ready to do some trainings with your staff. And I heard you say, give it to them real. Give it, you know, that you want those trainings, mm-hmm. and you want them to develop so they can be better for our kids. And so I appreciate that you do that. So I just wanted to give you that shout out. And on top of your answer, which was wonderful, by the way, I think just acknowledging that you are doing that, and more schools should do that. And so that's part of the beauty and power that charter schools have as well, is that you have a little bit of autonomy not to hire the person from the district office that told their cousin that, or their relative or their neighbor next door, that they were going to give them a job. Mm-hmm. You have a little more autonomy to make sure you get the best people in front of your kids, and hopefully people that look like them as well.
Yeah, 100%. And even like, and that is one thing just about being a Black educator in general. And I tell, you know, people all the time, I'm very much faith-based. And if it's okay for me to say, like, I definitely feel
sister.
God called me to this profession. And if he opened the door, you heard me. Like, if he opened the door, I'm gonna walk through it. And when it's time for that door to close, it's gonna close. Therefore, I fear nothing. Okay. I fear nothing, because at the end of the day, God is the author and finisher of my faith. So with that in mind, I'm not compromising myself. I'm not compromising my principles. I'm not compromising who I am. Like, I love our kids, and I want our kids. See, that's why I walk around here with my hair locked. Don't get it twisted. She light skinned, but she a thoroughbred. Okay. Mm-hmm. Like, that's why I walk around here with my hair twisted. I walk around here with my faith on my sleeve. I walk around here talking the way that I talk, because you can look like, you heard me. You can look like yourself. You can sound like yourself, and you can still be professional. You are still needed in these spaces. So I want to make sure that my students feel free and feel comfortable to be themselves. Like, you can still be, you know, the smartest and most hardest working person in the room, you know, with a little accent. Ain't nothing wrong with that. Preach. You know, so I definitely want to make sure students have the platform, you know, to be free to be themselves, you know.
Let me just say, man, I know we have to get up out of here. Jasmine Mathis, I'm not holding you. She the real deal. She's the real deal. I love her love for the Lord, but I love her love for our children, our people. It is amazing. So I want all y'all to take this for real, for real. Before we give it back to Dr. Paul Miller, who I love, even though his one flaw in life is that he's a Q. Other than that, I love him. But I'm not holding you. Your kids can learn. I'm not holding you. They can succeed. I'm not holding you. Not everybody's giving up on them. I'm not holding you. We're going to move the needle. Can you close us up, Dr. Miller?
Yes, sir. You know, and as we reflect on here, and we were talking about some of the myths, I think Jasmine set the mic on fire today. She really was able to debunk some of the myths, but also let you feel the passion and the purpose that she brings to the table, and that our that's in her school of citizenship, and also that's in quite quite a few, if not all, of these charter schools out there. And so some of the myths you've heard, you need to back them up with facts. And so if your myths are off of one experience, you know, that might not be happening to everybody. You need to understand that there are some myths out there, and there might even be some truth to it, but it's not the truth for all. And so hopefully we did a good job of talking about some of that today. And, you know, just one of the myths that I definitely want to end with is that charter schools are not public schools. Charter schools are public schools. They are publicly funded through state funding. That is, it makes it as public as it could be with high accountability. I believe New York State and Massachusetts have the highest accountability of any states in the country for charter schools. And so New York don't play that. And so if you want your kid to go to a high quality school where they will get a safe environment, a structured environment where learning has to take place, because if it doesn't, that charter school will not remain open. You need to look into the 25 charter schools that are here in Rochester and see that there are some great educational options. That is moving the needle. Hopefully we moved it a little bit. We're making some progress. We're filling up the gas tank. And tune in with us next week as we will be back with some more amazing guests and some more just good information that Rochester and the rest of this country needs. Until later, let's be greater.
Let's move the needle!